Do you ever feel stuck, like you're living your life on autopilot? Are you ready to shift into high gear and reach the success you so richly deserve? Welcome to the Play Big Movement podcast. I am your host, Sharon Lecter, entrepreneur, business strategist, and best-selling author. Playing big is not about settling for good enough or being comfortable. It is about reaching your highest potential and achieving your greatest success. Join me in my Play Big movement as I interview top experts in business, money, and entrepreneurship, all ready to serve you and to help you play big, be number one in your field, live your legacy, and create maximum impact. Hi, everybody. Welcome to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast with Sharon Lecter. And I'm excited about my guest today because I just met him recently. We were doing a LinkedIn Live, my very first LinkedIn Live. And he is the founder of I9 Sports. But more importantly, he is the absolute perfect example of someone who plays big. And you know, I talk about businesses solve a problem or serve a need. And that's his entire career has been focused on that. So Frank Fiume, I'm so happy to have you back with me. Thank you.
Sharon, thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
And like, I consider myself a pioneer in what I do. He's definitely a pioneer in the youth sports industry. And he didn't start with I9 Sports. He actually started an adult league for adult men's softball, ABA Sports, and then sold that. He got it up to 900 teams. And so he is a serial entrepreneur and passionate about kids. And I love this. He was ranked as the number one children's fitness franchise. And he's been featured in all the major medias. But at the end of the day, he was serving a need and solving a problem and really bringing sports to kids' lives in a really collaborative and fun and safe way. So Frank, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me today.
My pleasure.
So I want to talk, and I want to start with little Frank. How did we get on this path? So tell us a little bit about your background.
So little Frank was, I was a ball of trouble at home. I was super easygoing in school and stuff. School didn't come easy to me. I struggled in school, but you know, I was one of those kids as a 10-year-old that tore up the backyard and turned it into a wiffle ball stadium, which I called it. And I was the one that had all the neighborhood kids come, and I was creating these leagues inevitably as a 10-year-old. And, you know, I kept track of all the statistics and wins and losses. And, you know, my home ended up being the place where all the kids came to play wiffle ball, baseball. And then in the winter time, I got caught up in playing these board games, these baseball board games with dice called Strat-O-Matic. It's a game that's been around for many, many years. And baseball was just such a love of mine. I didn't realize that, I guess, inevitably I was getting those 10,000 hours, so to speak, of expertise starting as a 10-year-old. But it came so natural to me. I knew sports was going to be part of my life, but honestly, I didn't realize when I was a 10-year-old that this was going to lead to anything. It was just, I was having fun. That's what life was about, having fun.
I love that. And I think, you know, we talk about passion. This passion was with you from the very beginning and in all areas of sports. And I think so many people sit back and go, easy for him to say, easy for her to say, but you know, one person really can make a difference. I mean, you grew this idea and this passion for I9 Sports. Amazing to me, over $300 million in revenue, more than 2 million participants, 900 communities, 30 states nationwide. And people sit back and go, wow. But you didn't do it alone. I talk about the importance of the team and the formula and scaling. So talk a little bit about that explosion of growth and how you prepared for it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Great. So for starters, let me just, if I may, I want to back up to share with so many others that where I came from, I don't come from money. I didn't come from having any experience whatsoever. And I was not encouraged to start a business. So it wasn't exactly like I had friends and family falling over themselves to tell me, Frank, you need to do this. In fact, it was the exact opposite. I was always given the reasons why I shouldn't start a sports league business. I wasn't told, hey, this is interesting. Maybe we should look and see how this can be done. It was never that way. It was, You get a job out of college, you get a job, you do it for many, many years, you get the retirement, and that's it, the end. But that wasn't, that I knew there was more to it than for me. And part of it is having the passion, having the conviction of wanting to do something. And in doing that, and having that conviction and having a vision for what I wanted to create. And like you said earlier, knowing that I was solving a problem, I truly believe that there was a problem in youth sports and in adult sports as in the beginning, realizing that the leagues were just, they were not well run. They were run poorly. I knew it was a business that was not being treated like a business. And I think the more people, Sharon, that I shared my vision as I was fortunate enough to grow, the people that came onto my team who helped me grow this thing believed in my vision. They saw what I saw. And as we worked together, I also saw things that I maybe didn't see. They taught me along the way. And truly, my hiring for my weakness was my greatest, the greatest thing I'd ever done for my business and building a team around me, because you're only as good as your weakest link. And I think by building a team around me that fed into or satisfied my weaknesses and allowed me to focus on what I did well was part of the magic on how I9 Sports grew.
So let's think back about that first time when you scaled and you had, you know, you went from, you know, the day-to-day management onto the point where you realized that you had the business systems, because so much about your franchising is the ability to have a system that can be duplicatable. So, you know, how did you envision this would go? Because did it exceed your expectations?
Nothing went as I expected it. So we could either talk about a nice story, a fairy tale, or I could tell you exactly how it happened. You know, it's one of those things where most entrepreneurs, it's trial by fire, right? Sometimes we hear from people who have never really started their business, but academics that say, you know, you need to really have this exit strategy before you start the business, all these niceties. Look, we get into business because we have passion for something. The last thing we're thinking about is exiting from the very beginning. And I thought I had my act together when I started my league, because when I started my adult men's softball league and grew it, I created my own systems internally. So when I was ready to franchise my concept, Sharon, I thought I had all the processes in place. I hired a franchise consulting firm. They built a really pretty operations manual and the marketing pieces. And I was like, I'm ready to go. But the truth is, there's a difference between running a business and franchising a business, because when you're running a sports league, you're in the business of operating a sports league. When you franchise a sports league, you're in the business of supporting franchisees and making them successful. And it was trial by fire. We built systems along the way. You know, in the E-Myth Revisited, Michael Gerber talks about three ways that people go when they hit that threshold. You either go as fast as you can and you end up blowing up, or you shrink and die. Or the third one is you hold on for dear life and you start putting systems and processes in together. That was me. And you just do the best you can. And I think you have to be honest. You communicate. In my case, I was communicating with franchisees and I tried to collaborate as much as I can to work with them. They knew I was sincere. We had the right vision. We had a lot of great pieces in place, and we had a lot of great pieces that were not in place, but they were all over the floor and we're putting it together. So it was a work in progress, truthfully, over many years.
But you always had the vision of, and you always, as you said, people knew they trusted you. You know, people want to do business with people they know, like, and trust you. And so in the world, I mean, franchising is considered the most litigious form of business. So it's really important that you have that communication. In fact, I'd go so far as saying it's almost like a babysitting job at times when you're building, you know, because these young people are coming in to build their own business, but they're not really building their own business. They're taking something that's been successful and they're duplicating it. And sometimes they want to change it. And that sometimes gets a little crazy, right?
That, Sharon, that's the reality of franchising that a lot of franchisors don't talk about with potential franchisees. They don't share with them that this is a system that, you know, you're coming part of a brand. You're not, You're an entrepreneur, but to me, a true entrepreneur is somebody who, you know, rolls up the sleeves and starts something from scratch. Buying a franchise does not make you an entrepreneur. Buying a franchise means you bought something out of a box. In my case, starting out, yes, the pieces were all over the place and we worked together to get it going. I had many, many of the systems together, but it wasn't foolproof by any means. But I think in many cases, franchising does not do justice to folks by, if you're going to lead people to thinking that they're entrepreneurs by buying a franchise, you're doing a disservice to them. And people think oftentimes, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to leave my job and I'm going to buy a franchise. Well, that's great. And I think there's obviously there are millions of people where that fits perfectly for them. They need to buy a system that they can follow. And yes, you do have to have some entrepreneurial spirit. You have to be able to work autonomously because a franchisor is not going to babysit you and make sure you wake up every morning and get to work, right? It's your business. But there is a little, I think there's a misnomer about really what franchising is. So I think for us, it was, I tried to be as transparent as possible of what our system, what, you know, what we are, what we do. And in many cases, there were times where I know I hurt people's feelings, where I would share with them, hey, we're not going to go in a certain direction that I thought was in conflict with our brand values. For example, tackle football. I mean, that's not, if we're about fun, safety, and convenience, tackle football doesn't really fit our brand. So staying true to the brand and doing what's right, not what's popular, is probably one of the most difficult things in being a leader.
Wow, such a great, doing what right is right, not what's popular. That's true in so many aspects of life, isn't it?
You take a lot of arrows, but if you're going to be honest, you're going to be sincere for what you do, then you have to do it that way. Otherwise, yeah. You're going to, I don't know how you're going to put your own head on your own pillow at night. You're just doing, trying to keep people, and you're not going to make people happy if you just do what's popular, ultimately, because those people still complain, right? So Do the right thing. It's pretty simple. That's it. Just do the best you can and do the right thing.
Well, I talk about a scale, you know, as a business owner, you have the business owner who's really good at managing, which is a great, perfect opportunity as per franchisee, and the business owner that is an entrepreneur that really kind of wants to do it their own way. And they're probably not the best franchisee to have because they want to change everything and they don't want to follow a system that's been proven to be successful. But there's, if the franchise is, that's why it's so popular. And that's why it's a little more expensive, because it's been proven as a proven successful model. And you're being given the systems instead of having to build them on your own. Right.
True. Now what's really normal in franchising, I've talked to other new franchisors to kind of prepare them for this, is that what is very, very common in franchising, when you first start a franchise, like I did, the first franchisees are entrepreneurial. Let's face it. If they're coming into a franchise where there is no other franchisee, they are a risk taker. If you're a risk taker, then you're not really a rule follower. You want to shoot more from the hip and you like the freedom. Now that's normal in franchising. And I think this is where, as a franchisor, you have to be able to work together and sharing with those early franchisees that, let's face it, we're going to have more rules and systems as you go along, which coincidentally, when you have your 100th franchisee, they look nothing like your first franchise. That's because that 100th franchise was never going to be your first franchisee. He or she needed the systems, the processes, the proven model, the proven success of 99 others that came before him or her. Yeah. So as a franchisor, you do see inherently a much different candidate. But as a new franchisor, such as myself starting out, you don't know what a good or bad franchisee for your system looks like. You go on based on, do you like them? Do you think they're organized? Do they communicate well? Do they have the money? Are they credit worthy? I mean, a lot of those things, such as those are some of the basic premises you look for. I started looking in the beginning, Sharon, for people that like sports. That was like the worst thing I could have done. Because I'm not in sports. Yeah, in any franchise, it has nothing to do with sports. You're doing management, marketing, finance, operations, technology. I didn't mention sports in any one of those five things, but that's truly what you do in running an I-9 sports business. Sports is just the vehicle that we use. And I try to share that with people when they come to buy a franchise, so they get a good understanding of really what they're buying, because they get so caught up in the whole thing about sports, which I love, don't get me wrong, but we don't talk home runs and touchdowns in the office. We talk about management, marketing, operations, finance, and IT.
So we teach a course, Frank, that talks about all the elements of a business, the mission, the team leadership, and the legal resources, relationships, marketing, business systems, and the deliverable up here. You know, it's like, and I go, that's, you know, most people focus on the deliverable and that's it. Profits, right? It's like, you got to have all these other elements together. And that's the beauty of a franchise, because the model is there.
That's what business really is. It's exciting, but it also it puts in perspective for people of what to expect when you're really going to be running a business. What are the things you really need to talk about? And it's not so, we love the feel good stories, and I love going down to the field and seeing the kids score their first goal and seeing mom and dad and grandma and grandpa there. And that's what would fuel me to want to do better. And it gave me so much passion, like, hey, I'm doing something worthwhile. But when you're back in the office, you're rolling up your sleeves and you're dealing with, like you said, all those items that make the machine run.
Yep. Turn it into an economic engine, right?
That's really what it's about. Engine.
Yeah. And you talked about exiting, and my new book, Exit Rich, is about, you know, as business owners, we most of us do go into business without thinking about exit. But when you really want to make sure you own a business, not a job, it's important to think about those foundational elements and those systems, those business systems. And you're kind of forced into it when you have a franchise, because you got to put together the documentation for the franchise. Most business owners that are not franchises don't put those systems in play. And so the book is about building that valuation in your business, establishing those systems, and understanding that, you know, at some point, whether you want to sell or not, the way that you become scalable is to have those systems in place and bring in the people who are strong where you are weak. And I think you referenced that, right?
That is, anytime somebody asks me, okay, what was like the number one thing, if I had to know, it was absolutely hire for your weakness. When I hired the president of our company, who is now he's the CEO and chairman, Brian Sanders. Brian's a brilliant man. He's super polished. He came from a long list of corporate positions, but he was chief marketing officer for a multi-billion dollar direct mail company, had 160 sales reps. I come from medical sales, but I came from, you know, running this adult men's softball league. I was a little more of I'm the crazy founder and visionary. And he knows how to manage and lead. And he's great at implementing all of my, well, crazy ideas, but he was absolutely collaborative in many, many ideas. And he's part of really being, I consider him really a founding father of the business in many ways. But what changed our business forever was truly hiring him, because he was my weakness. His strengths were my weaknesses. And that's what really changed the business. And by the way, that was in late 2008 when I made that decision. So it was probably not a very popular time, people would think, but that's when it's even most important, is doing things when it's uncomfortable.
Absolutely. So what was the trigger? Because I think you talked about this when we did the LinkedIn Live, about when you made that decision to exit something that you loved.
Well, you know, I think for me and many others, I had an identity crisis. Myself and I-9 Sports were one and the same. And I guess when you love something and you start it and you work night and day, 7 days a week, you don't count the hours, you become so intertwined with it, you become the business, it becomes you. I got to the point, though, when I knew the business was bigger than me, I started feeling really guilty that I thought it was maybe time for me to move on. And then I was feeling guilty that, wait a minute, if I-9 Sports was my purpose in life, because I thought this whole thing was leading to, you know, this softball league, men's, and then go to kids and franchise and becomes this success over many years. I thought this is what now I know why I was meant to be here. And it turns out, obviously, that wasn't the case. But when I got caught up in this whole thing of thinking, I don't think I should be going any further with this business. I think it's time for me to go. I had this enormous amount of guilt. And I'll never forget Tony Robbins. I was at an event and Tony said, success without fulfillment is ultimate failure. And then he said, if you don't love what you do, you need to get out of your business because you owe it to yourself and you owe it to your business. You're hurting your business. And that struck me so hard because I love I9 Sports. It wasn't that I didn't love it. I loved it with all my heart. I was no longer needed is the truth. I hired a great team. They did everything that needed to be done. Yes, I came into the office and I came in less and less. I was not needed and it hurt. I took it personal. I did what people hope, you hope for. You hope one day you grow your company and you don't need to be there. Well, I got exactly what I wanted and I was thoroughly disappointed despite all the money and success, whatever. I had purpose going there. And I know then at one point I had no longer having purpose. So I made the decision when I was in my late 40s, when I said to my wife, you know, let's not be stupid here. All of our financial eggs are in this business basket. We're getting older. I was getting closer to 50. And I said to her, I think, you know, the kids are getting older. My daughter was off to college. My son was in high school. I'm like, you know, I think we got to take some chips off the table. I think it's the smart move. It was taking the emotion out of how much I loved I9 completely out of the equation and doing what was right. And I think I took the business as far as I was supposed to take it.
Well, I think it's important. You know, we think about legacy. I'm sure for many years you thought that I9 was your legacy. It's just like for me working at Rich Dad, you know, building that organization, owning it and writing 15 books. I thought Rich Dad was my legacy. And then when I had to make the decision to leave because it was not the right thing for me to do anymore, mm-hmm. I did not know what the future held, just like you probably didn't know what the future held. But then what I tell everybody, sometimes you have to close one door for other doors of opportunity to open. And now you're giving such incredible value to other people in the franchising world. Share a little bit about what you do these days.
So my passion really is in two things. One, based on what you already heard from my story, I love to help people that are franchising their business and I want to help them avoid the mistakes that I made. That's the number one thing. And so I am helping new franchisors that are successful in their own business and want to make that leap to how to make this a successful brand that they can expand. So that's the first thing. And the second thing that I have passion for is, you could probably hear in my voice, it's about the transition of exit. Sharon, when I exited I9 Sports, I was happy for about a week. You know, I saw all those zeros in my bank account and it, like, the happiness went, I was grateful, totally grateful. And I was super happy, but the money part wears off. I didn't start the business for money. I didn't grow it for money. I did it because I wanted fulfillment. And I was lost when I sold the business. I didn't know what I was going to do. I still knew I made the right decision. So my passion is I want to help other entrepreneurs transition life after exiting their business. And that's that, because there's a way of doing it successfully and there's a grieving process that's okay. There's a little bit of a mourning and that's okay. But I don't think we're ever taught. Do you remember hearing in school or in business school or any courses where they tell you what you're supposed to do, how to, after you exit, what life should be like? Nobody prepares you for it.
No, because you're supposed to be an employee all your life. Yes.
Oh, yes. That's the first problem. And in any entrepreneurial course, anything, any seminar conference we go to, it's never about, hey, here are the kind of the phases that you go through post-exit for a successful transition in your life.
Right. From success to significance is what I call it.
Bingo. Absolutely. Yeah. But I get it. There's not empathy. There's not sympathy for someone that made money selling a business and made millions of dollars. I get that. But you know what? When you do it in all sincerity and building the business, and it was not about money, and you have so many people who have made a difference in so many people's lives, there's a great need of helping these folks in help creating new jobs, in giving more to people. I've been able to give more post selling the business than I did while I was growing it and building it because I was so focused on growing the business. But doing more, giving more, has become a bigger mission for me. And I think for folks that sell their business, they realize that life is ultimately about growing, but it's more so about contribution.
Right.
And there's a great need there of helping others.
Yeah, it is. You elevate yourself to being a mentor to, you know, using your experience to help others create even more success in their life. And this is such, I love what I do. But when you're in the thick of it, and you do, you become identified with that. And there is a process, even when it's not your own company. So when my husband retired from the corner office at the law firm, having hundreds of people working for him, there was an identity crisis but he was choosing to do what he wanted to be able to do it on his own. But the transition is there, whether it's through selling a business or changing your career path. And it's important to do that. So Frank, if people want to find you, how do they find you?
They can go to my website. It's frankfiume.com. That's FIUME.com. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. You can find me all over.
And what an incredible success and a gift you've given to young people all over the world, basically. And I thank you so much for what you do. And you're going to hang in with me because we're going to do another shorter interview for the Facebook group. So those of you watching and listening, if you've not joined the private Facebook group, the Play Big Movement with Sharon Lecter, please do so you can hear the rest of Frank's story. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate you. And hold on tight for just a moment. And for the rest of you, thank you so much for being here and listening and really learning. To make sure you rewind and listen to Frank, because what an incredible success story he has and his heart. You can just see and hear the heart that he has to help others. So make sure you pay attention and listen to it and take notes and join us on the other side in the private Facebook group. Have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to this segment of the Play Big Movement podcast. Please subscribe to iTunes and leave us a review, as well as join us in other areas of social media, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Sharon Lecter, and for Facebook, author Sharon Lecter. Thank you so much and have a fabulous day.